Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we are focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and now let's get on with the show. When things go sideways, will you be prepared? Some people are concerned they might have to go for a long time without electricity or even food. That's why I want to introduce you to 4patriots.com. Get preparedness products you can use now, and that could save your life later. My favorite is 4patriots' new solar generator, the Patriot Power Generator 2000X. It uses the endless free power of the sun to power lights, your TV, medical equipment, even run your fridge. Plus, it's expandable and comes with a free solar panel. Or pick up one of 4patriots' best-selling survival food kits. Delicious tasting and designed to last for 25 years. They even have kits with real meat, and if the power's out, no worries. Just boil water over a fire, simmer, and serve. You'll enjoy a hot meal and stay safe in a crisis. More smart people than ever are finding 4patriots. Over 2 million customers trust them, and you might have even seen them on TV. I had the folks at 4patriots set up a special page for you at 4patriots.com/drive-on so that listeners of this podcast can see this week's discounts and deals before they go away. Go to 4patriots.com/drive-on, but hurry, these deals won't last long. Save more and get peace of mind now by going to 4patriots.com/drive-on. Hey everybody, welcome back to Drive On. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and today my guest is James Gervasio. James is a Marine veteran whose personal journey took him through trials like combat addiction and trauma to a path of self-discovery and healing. And he's now working to help others navigate through their own situations to find peace. We'll get into that in just a minute here, but welcome to the show, James. I'm really glad to have you here.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. So for the folks who maybe aren't familiar with you and your background, and you know, I gave a little bit of a background on you, but can you tell us a little bit more about yourself and your journey, how you got to where you are today?
So it's the condensed version. I'll give you the condensed version. The story is long. My parents divorced when I was really young. They both worked. They separated my sister and I. So I was a latchkey kid growing up. So I was smart for school, but I was wild, you know what I mean? And I enjoyed having a good time. So there wasn't, you know, my father is a Marine too, in Vietnam. He was dealing with his own stuff. So he was non-existent as a role model in my formative years. So I just got into crazy things. You know what I mean? I was just a wild kid, wise ass. School just passed me through because the teachers liked me. I wasn't a scumbag, but you know, I would cause some trouble. So I was always going to join the Marine Corps because of my father. And, they walked me at my graduation with no diploma because I had, my GPA was so horrible. I mean, I was in summer school every year. So, I mean, I entered the Marine Corps on two waivers. You know, I failed the P test to get in for marijuana. And I mean, this is in 99. So I joined in 99 right out of high school. So in July, I turned 19 in boot camp, and they actually sent my diploma to me in boot camp too, after I had taken a summer course, and they sent me the diploma. And that was fun receiving that in public, you know?
Right.
Well, not, right.
I'm sure the drill instructors did not make it easy for you when.
No, so you know what's funny is I remember getting it, but I don't remember anything else. So like it must have been fun.
It was either absolutely nothing or it was so traumatizing that you completely forgot it.
Right. I almost feel like they brought me into this shack and did it in there, because I was really this was my energy now as a gifted child focused by the Marine Corps. And I excelled in every way possible. I was just Lou Diamond, man. I was built for this, you know?
Yeah.
And I grew up with it, you know, staring at the emblem on my wall as a baby. And now I'm in it and I'm taking it seriously because this is, my father was shot 9 times, man. You know, like I spent most of my high school time in class reading novels about combat in Vietnam. Like I lived this, you know, in the tumultuous kind of environment of my upbringing with my parents doing the best they could. Yeah. And me being a sensitive kid, I was toughened to the point where that I'm pretty sure that I was one of, you know, like I was toughened to the point where I was able to handle the Marine Corps as something positive. Mm-hmm. Right. So like all of these things that had gone against me as a child were now my biggest assets.
Right.
We trained for 2 years until September 11th happened. So then I was a corporal at the time. I picked up corporal less than 2 years. September 11th happened. We were in the field at Bragg on a field exercise. I was in an artillery unit. So I was a fire direction control for an artillery, battery, Charlie Battery, 1st Battalion, 10th Marines. And so when we were in the field, when September 11th happened, so we didn't see this live. My buddy was listening to the radio and we were all just laying outside the trucks. This is 2001. So we're, you know, there's very little electronic, you know, like distractions around. It's just us laying around smoking cigarettes with transistor radios.
Right.
So he's like, oh man, you know, a plane hit the World Trade Center. And I'm like, oh, that sucks. You know, it had happened before. So it wasn't, I'm from Northern New Jersey, right outside of Manhattan. So it was like, oh, well, you know, too bad. 20 minutes later, he's like, another one hit and they're saying it's a terrorist attack. And now you could look down the line of vehicles and see everybody gathered, clustered around the radios in the trucks, listening to this happening. Maybe like 11 a.m., noon. And we were staged in a field getting ready to go back to Lejeune, where I was stationed. And people were driving by honking the horn. They thought we were staging to go to war. So they were all ready. We knew we were going and it was only a matter of time. So I went home for Christmas that year and I got back and we left in January to go to Afghanistan. We replaced the first troops that were there. So I was on a ship called the Trenton and my unit was doing maritime interdiction with the SEALs. So the SEALs were raiding commercial shipping coming out of Pakistan and the Marines were keeping security in Zodiacs around these container ships while the SEALs fast roped in. So we did that for 107 days. We were underway for 107 days straight, set the record for that kind of ship. Didn't set foot in Afghanistan, but you know, like it was a very tense environment. The SEALs on board. I mean, this was war, you know, this is our first taste of it. And I mean, we hit a beach in Djibouti before Camp Lemonnier was a real big base over there. We hit that beach and we assaulted that beach knowing they're not expecting resistance. But we assaulted the beach like from the ships on Higgins boat, you know what I mean? Like laid out a perimeter. That was eye opening. That was cool, you know? And then, so we got back from that deployment. 4 months later, I end up in Iraq. And I'm a sergeant at this point. I picked up sergeant meritoriously in 2 years, 8 months. And we were like, we had done a Bridgeport summer rock, package, which is like a mountain warfare school at the mountain warfare school in Bridgeport, California. We had been training for 3 years. I mean, we couldn't have been more prepared for war than we were. The unit was tight. We had a lot of guys, core guys that stayed for were together for 2 or 3 years and all these significant field ops. So we had some shit hot NCOs. They gave us the best officers because they could see our potential. It was really amazing, you know, what we were able to do with each other. So we end up in Iraq and I was in an artillery battery, but we trained alongside the grunt. So like if you're a tanker, you're artillery or you're an infantry, you're all getting that ground training. It's not, you know, the grunts, that's their MOS, but. Yeah. You'd be like, I pounded ground, man. I was a squad leader. You know what I mean? Like I've got miles on these feet just like grunts do. So the training that you get is very similar. Now, it's not the same. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
I'm not a grunt by trade, right? I've done the work. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But when we hit Iraq, we drove for 2 days with no resistance. And that was the first days of the war. There was nothing that happened. So it was everybody that was going to Baghdad that wasn't going to swing around west was had to cross the Euphrates in the city called Nasiriyah. There was the Saddam Canal and the Euphrates River, and there were bridges over both of these. And the grunt's main objective in our combat team was to take those bridges as fast as we can. So there had been there wasn't supposed to be anything significant happening in the city. Okay. And we were pissed that we were going there because we knew we weren't going to get up to Baghdad. And on the morning we arrived, there was an army supply convoy with Jessica Lynch was driving through the city and takes a wrong turn and gets ambushed. They lost, I think there was 12 KIA and six of them were taken prisoner, army supply, including Jessica Lynch. And it was our unit that rolled up on that ambush and rescued. We put the rest of their wounded guys in the ambulance, secured that up. And then the war was on.
Yeah.
So we stopped on the side of the, and then it was like, we assaulted the city. Like it was, you know, like the doctrine that we were going with in those days was still largely based off of World War II. You know, they weren't using this artillery in this way in Vietnam. So we were a mobile artillery force, and we were moving positions and just firing nonstop for 2 weeks. Now, the amount of so that task force ended up on the first day of major fighting, the 23rd of March, that ended up with 23 KIA and I think 60 or something wounded. By the end of the battle, 32 dead, 90 something wounded, 19 of those men from a single grunt company, Charlie Company, 1st Battalion, 2nd Marines, who I was supporting. My forward observer, Fred Picorni, was killed. And I knew a lot of guys that were in, you know, this was happening within a kilometer or two of my position.
Right.
So and at this point, the Iraqi army was still the third largest in the world. And they had tanks, they had artillery, they had accurate weapon systems, you know, and they came after us. And they sent a Republican Guard brigade down from Baghdad, and we caught them in the open at the train station. And we laid waste in this city, right? And I was on the radio for a lot of the casualties, a lot of the KIA from Charlie 1-2. And I wasn't supposed to be monitoring this radio, but I was doing it because I could pull grids from that radio, and I was feeding them to another guy who had the range already calculated by the time we received the mission from battalion, mm-hmm. or fire mission from battalion. We already knew. I had all this data ginned up, and we had rounds out in seconds.
Right.
In seconds. And it was, and I was good, very good at that job. So I could lay artillery in anywhere you wanted on the top of a Humvee. I mean, like, we were very good.
And time is critical in situations like that. Right?
Absolutely critical. So now, like, in my job as a command communicator, is there's five or six guys in my squad that are all pulling up a separate piece of information from whatever their specialty is. There's a guy on a chart. There's a guy with a slide rule calculating elevation. There's another guy on the lieutenant's on the map. Somebody else is on the radio. And all of this information gets boiled, you know, and then you're taking into the curvature of the earth, the weight of the round, the temperature of everything, right? What guns are shooting, what guns aren't, what kind of ammo do they have? You know, so all of this is a moving calculation under extreme pressure, because every second you don't get a round out is another second our grunts are in danger and are getting killed. And actually, like, it was a running joke in our unit. If you're moving slow, someone's going to run up behind you and start screaming in your ear, grunts are dying. And this is how we trained for 3 years, man. So we got over there and we on the way, we had figured out a new way to rig our computers. So we were really cutting, we were really just, it was an amazing performance. Now, fast forward, I got out of major combat a couple months after that, and I was in college and working full time for a plumber. Within 3 months, I took a bubble questionnaire coming back on the ship, and thank God I took that, because I was having symptoms on the ship already. of PTSD. And I never exited the military. Basically, I was a civilian, but I was on autopilot. I didn't think once about the moral implications of what we did over there. There was no processing of what happened.
Yeah.
You know, I had been involved in some significant incidents, you know what I'm saying? Myself and other guys who are now no longer with us, you know, like the guy at my, and I ended up, so I get through college with honors, graduate with 2 degrees. I couldn't, now when I was in college, I was falsely accused of rape by a woman who, and I was arrested for that. And I was charged, and charges were dropped, and it was all false. But that arrest, now I wasn't able to get a federal law enforcement job, which is the only reason why I got out of the military. And I was being recruited by the CIA, and I was trying to get into the, I even forget the acronyms now, all the little tiny 3-letter agencies was what I was trying to do. And I was trying to go into intelligence. So now this is important, because when I was in Iraq in the Battle of Nasiriyah, I remember I was always going to be a lifer. And everyone's like, Sergeant Gervasio, you're going to reenlist. And I'm like, the only way I'll reenlist is if we go to war. And we ended up going to war. And at war, I knew that I couldn't live my life. I saw my future in the Marine Corps, right? I maxed out. I would become a general, right? But I probably wouldn't make it. And I would be, you know, like I would be killed, because I like to fight. And I would have moved to some kind of special operations unit. And that's what I would have done. Now, what that would have done to, let's say I have a 20-year career as a Marine reconnaissance operator, and I get out of the military, which is right around now, the same exact time. And what skills do I now have to offer the world? Now, I have some, you know, I can have some violence, and I'm a soldier, I'm a Marine, right? But then the issue becomes, who's right and who do I fight for? Because
that's right.
What happened subsequent to us going over there, you know, ripped me apart. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I was just thinking that, you know, in war there's us and there's them, right? But
right. The first time I heard the word Haji, which is a derogatory term, I in my mind somebody had come up to me and said it to me, and I didn't know where he heard it, because we were isolated in the field. Like, I didn't know, we had never used that before to describe anyone, and I had thought in my mind, you know, thinking about what we used to call the enemy in Vietnam, you know,
yeah,
and like wondering what to call them. And someone came up and used the word Haji. And my instant reaction was, listen, we're not going to talk. We're not using those kind of words. We're not going to dehumanize these people. So these guys are out here fighting for what they believe, just like us. You know what I mean? Now, at the time, I know what we were fighting for, right? Now, there's no one else that's ever going to be able to tell me why I did this. Okay.
Yeah. I think
my intent matters for my future.
So in the situation, right, we have, you look back throughout history, there's these words that we use just to dehumanize that enemy. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think where I was going before is that, you know, we know those guys are the bad guys, right? But if you were to bring this, all the skill set, all the fighting and the training and all the things that you've learned in the Marine Corps, and bring it back to a civilian career, you know, law enforcement's probably the closest you're going to find to that, right? Where the line is kind of blurred between who's good and who's bad, and because
it's a moving target constantly. Exactly. This is why this is a spiritual part of it. You know what I mean?
There you go. Yeah.
And like, so, good is not absolute. It's relative.
It is relative.
It's relative.
And relative to the situation too, because somebody could be good up until they're not. Right.
Absolutely. And it's real. Right. So, I mean, like, I say good is halfway in between right and wrong.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, it's, and that, because you know what? Like, we did horrible things at war. Like, and I liked it at the time. This is what my purpose on earth was, to, you know, cause massive damage and kill, you know, in large quantities.
Mm-hmm.
And like, and I did that with, you know, and it's not cold blood, but I did it because I wanted to do my job for my country. Right.
Right.
And then I got out and I was having trouble and nobody cared. And like, I was disappointed. I was constantly being disappointed with the way the lack of loyalty I felt from the government, from the VA, from the military, you know what I mean? And it broke my heart to the point where I couldn't function as a man because I was so hurt by the system that I had poured so much into, mm-hmm. you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That I, and like, I, and I, like when I started sorting through the moral implications of what happened, you know, and I don't want to get into, I don't want to make this like a crying session, but like, I, you know, like we did horrible things, man. And it's, and turns out that the reasoning behind it might not have been exactly what we were led to believe. And
sure,
that hurt.
Yeah.
You know, and because I was the cause, we laid waste to that city with the civilian population in place.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, and we, you know, like they didn't, they kept the civilians in there, the Fedayeen, and made the men go out and fight because, I don't know why, you know, I don't know why. That's what they did. The Fedayeen were holding women and children until the third or fourth day. And they let them out. They all streamed out of the city on foot.
Right.
We had already been, and we didn't even realize they were in there. We didn't see them. They were all just hiding, you know?
So how did you overcome this when you got back, you know, you're not getting the support that you were hoping for, you know, from, you know, the VA or from the government in general? What did you do to kind of change that mindset in your own head?
So remember, the way I grew up, I didn't have the kind of guidance and like, I wasn't taught how to deal with any emotions. Cause my father, my family, I come from a very conservative Italian family, you know, sixth generation Americans, and like they're upstanding citizens,
right?
You know, they're the way that we dealt with our emotions as I was a kid, you know, it, so now I have all this stuff and I'm smart and I'm dangerous. Right. And I don't know. So I started, I felt, and I was drinking, I used drugs, and I got hooked on the pills that the VA gave me, all of that. And I, inside the entire time, was like this like raging, like a dark cloud, but it, you know, not anger, but like just disgust, like, and I didn't know at what, and like a lot, you know, like a lot of it was because of my childhood, you know, from my childhood. Mm-hmm. And then the military stuff compounded things from my childhood and turned me into an uncontrollable, you know, an uncontrollable now. But at the same time, I was in grad school. I was on the board of charities. I was legislative director for the VFW. So on the I was holding it together in public to do my job, but in private, I didn't leave my apartment for 2 years. So at the end of 2 years.
Yeah, on paper everything seemed like it was going great, right? And but
it was then, just right. So like because the paper was going great, that's all I want to care about.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And when you go to try to get help and it's like, well, you got all these things going for you. Like what's the problem?
Absolutely.
You know, and yes. And so but there is a problem and it's not being addressed. And I guess that's the problem is, you know, it isn't being addressed.
It's just the way that we're addressing it.
Yeah.
You know, it's the way that we're addressing it. And so as a result of me not having learned this stuff growing up, I had to learn, if I was going to survive, I had to figure life out on the fly alone, you know, because people, like you said, they thought that I was just an asshole. They didn't understand why I wouldn't do certain things or, you know?
Yeah.
So so a lot of people turned their back because they didn't know how to handle me as a Marine and a hero in their eyes and a leader. And when the leader is faltering, you know, if you're not another leader, like you don't know, what do? You know what I mean? Like, doesn't that make you feel, so I was not doing well. Now it got to the point where I put myself in the hospital in 2016. I submitted to the VA, and like, it's a longer story, but I had met a guy that I served with who convinced me to go. I was in horrible shape, hadn't left my apartment, on pills. So he set it up. So I got into the best PTSD program in the country, Coatesville, Pennsylvania. It's a VA run program, residential program, 4 months. And they went back about a year later for another 30 days. So it's That saved my life. That stabilized me. That was in 2016. Now, I, around the same time, began having this awakening and noticing things about the world that weren't really what they were, you know, what I was told they were. And so that started a long process of kind of seeking, and then, oh, you know, like you go these, you know, you start noticing this stuff, right? Which led me, because I was still having a rough time, and I'm really like, and I didn't have an emotional support network because my father, unfortunately, I love him, you know what I mean? But he's dealing with his own stuff, and he just didn't have the wherewithal. And the only reason why I know that is because I know how, because I felt the same way, you know, like I know exactly how he felt growing up, and I don't hold anything against him. You know, this is my, you know, this is just how it is.
And sure.
So it always was pushing me towards spirituality. And as time has gone on, I had a Kundalini awakening in 2020, or 2021. And then I had another awakening experience about 2 years later, which is about 10 months ago now, where I was kind of gifted this understanding of our internal makeup and how this, our energetic emotions contributes to the world at large, right? So what I had to do to get better was to manage the thoughts that I was having. I needed to learn what was going on in my head, and then I needed to learn how to maneuver while this was happening.
Sure.
And the ancient traditions that I looked into, and the only real answers that I found were these ancient spiritual traditions, and because they knew how to do this back then. And it's, a lot of this is carved in stone, and it's mental alchemy and balancing energy. You know what I mean? And my internal makeup, and the fact that the way that I feel is based on what I think and what I eat and what I do, you know?
Yeah.
And like, I had to dedicate my life to surviving because otherwise I was just going to die. And like, I had realized that the kind of courage it took to stand, to fire artillery in the face of a tank shooting at us was easy compared to the kind of courage it takes to go inside here and find out exactly what it is that's causing the dis-ease in your life.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And sometimes those,
that was harder.
Yeah. Sometimes those things in your head are the toughest things to have to battle. It's right.
Yes. And that's when I was like, when I was in Iraq and I realized I needed to get out because I was going to die, I said to myself, I want to serve with my mind. Mm-hmm. And then to me at the time, it meant being in intelligence, you know, but what happened was the universe now is really making me serve with my mind. This is really what this has turned into, and, you know, in a spiritual way. And, so I asked for it and I got it, you know, so it's that stuff that's in our head is, you know, the way that we handle that is directly correlated to how successful we are in our goals and our ambitions, you know, in our life, in our spiritual life, and how fulfilled we are. You know, if we have trauma or we have thoughts that, you know, that make us feel a certain way, you know, ignoring them and taking pills doesn't fix it.
Right.
We have to integrate that process, those traumas, and there's ways to do it with our thoughts, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like you said, ignoring them or taking pills and just, that's just masking the symptoms. It's
right. It's called treating the symptoms, not the problem.
Exactly. Right. And so you want to get to the root of the problem. You know, if you have weeds growing in your grass, right, you just pick the top little bit, the weed's going to grow right back. Right. So you may not see it for a little while because, you know, you pick the top part, but the root's still there and it's going to continue to grow back and it's going to come back again and again and again. And eventually it's going to kill your whole lawn.
Right. Absolutely. This is why society is the way it is now, because everyone is walking around unbalanced and they don't know it because they haven't done anything wrong. We just haven't been taught. And the knowledge about how to do this has been kind of co-opted, you know, and people look at it now as something that, you know, their perception has shifted completely to treating their symptoms with external means.
That's right.
As opposed to what we're naturally meant to do, which is treat them, you know, learn from them and integrate them and treat them so that we can evolve spiritually, right?
Yeah. So how do you help other people now kind of come to this realization that they aren't balanced, and how do they?
It's a soul reconnection.
Okay.
So like they probably already know, right? Most people already know. And like and there's no way I'm ever going to be able to convince nobody who doesn't want to change is ever going to listen to what I say.
Sure.
Right. What I have to offer is for people who have experienced hardship and see a better way, or even if they haven't experienced hardship and they just have a feeling inside that the world should be a different place, right? They've been hurt before, you know, by unbalanced individuals overreacting emotionally to their own internal struggle, and other people are suffering as a result of that. Now, you can take it as far as governments and nations now are sick because the things that we're using to treat our issues are corporate, right? And throwing money at it is not going to get us as a civilization evolved. Like now we're talking about AI. You talk about AI and responsible AI. And you better have some balanced individuals that are running that, because that's the downfall of humanity. Not AI. I'm not saying that AI is the downfall. I'm saying that if you surround a technology with such high potential with irresponsible, unbalanced individuals, the results are going to be irresponsible and unbalanced. We can't have a balanced collective without balanced individuals.
That's right. And if you have any group of people and they're unbalanced, you know, as a collective, you're not going to, you know, whether it's the government, whether it's a company, whether it's, you know, you name it, any group of people, you know, a social club or a VFW or something like that, you're going to have, it's like a cancer that's just going to start spreading.
And it's fractal too. So it happens on the individual level, on the core, on the community level, on the you know, larger galactic level, and all this, you know. So this is how you know, you know, where kind of our trajectory is going.
When things go sideways, will you be prepared? Some people are concerned they might have to go for a long time without electricity or even food. That's why I want to introduce you to 4patriots.com. Get preparedness products you can use now, and that could save your life later. My favorite is 4Patriot's new solar generator, the Patriot Power Generator 2000X. It uses the endless free power of the sun to power lights, your TV, medical equipment, even run your fridge. Plus, it's expandable and comes with a free solar panel. Or pick up one of 4Patriot's best-selling survival food kits. Delicious tasting and designed to last for 25 years. They even have kits with real meat. And if the power's out, no worries. Just boil water over a fire, simmer, and serve. You'll enjoy a hot meal and stay safe in a crisis. More smart people than ever are finding 4Patriots. Over 2 million customers trust them. You might have even seen them on TV. I had the folks at 4Patriots set up a special page for you at 4patriots.com/drive-on so that listeners of this podcast can see this week's discounts and deals before they go away. Go to 4patriots.com/drive-on, but hurry, these deals won't last long. Save more and get peace of mind now by going to 4patriots.com/drive-on. So when you're working with people, and we're talking about how, you know, whether it's a corporation or a government or, you know, whatever, there's this, you know, you have crap going in, you're going to have crap coming out, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's basically the makeup of that organization is the sum of the individuals that are a part of it. And if we're electing crappy people, crappy leaders, or we're putting people in leadership positions in companies that aren't, the best balanced type people, then as a whole, the company is going to, or the organization's just not going to work out. So how do we focus on getting these individuals to be more balanced? And how do we?
We don't. Okay. We focus on only ourselves.
Okay.
And that's it, right? Now, because free will is a big part of this, right? And so you have, in order to evolve spiritually, we have to allow people to learn themselves to make mistakes. Because I don't believe using force and to subjugate someone else in terms of what they believe in any way, whether it's humans are born inherently with the ability to govern themselves, right, within whatever context they're in. And they don't need an outside external force telling them what to do and how to think, because the system as it's set up right now, unfortunately, is not set up for us. It's set up for interests, you know, that it's set up for interests that are beyond our control. And we're really at the mercy of this now. And you know, like, there are people who will never believe there's anything wrong with what's happening in the world. And they're gonna unfortunately, they have to learn the hard way, which means through lessons, right? And so things in the world are gonna have to get very much worse before they get any better. But what happens when they get worse is that people start waking up. So the way that I go about this is not, when you say that one person is right and one person, when you say I'm right and you're wrong, when you approach somebody, if I approach you and say you're unbalanced and energetically, you're going to be insulted because you don't know me, right? Sure. And it's like, so anything I tell that person that they're lacking or that they need to do or that they don't have something already, you know, like, none of that is true. They already have everything that they need inside, right? And if in order to not create an oppositional position from someone when I'm explaining to them an energetic truth of the universe, I don't want them to feel bad about themselves, because there's a lot of different people take these a lot of different ways. You know, some people feel bad because they didn't figure it out and it makes them feel bad about themselves, or they're threatened because, you know, of whatever reason. And what that does is that creates, now, because they're misunderstanding, creates pain for me, because the way that they've been taught to act out against things they don't understand is outward with force and try to change somebody's belief and you're wrong and I'm right and we'll kill each other over it. And you know what? The one thing we haven't done in history to solve these problems is not fight. And if you put everybody in a world, in a room, no one's going to fight unless somebody's in there egging people on, you know? And now, granted, a running debate with me, now I've had, you know, my views on defense of what is right, quote unquote, have evolved over time, right? And I'm still, the jury is out with me as to whether or not force is a necessary part of our existence as humans, right? But like, I think we can't get out of this where we're at without these things working themselves through society. So you can't just make a law and stop everything that's bad, because there's going to be someone that's getting hurt on the other end of that. And the object is not to hurt anybody else, because if we're all looking at ourselves and with the goal of treating our internal strife so that it doesn't bleed out and affect other or people and hurt other people, then everybody does what they feel like doing inside their soul's mission or their soul's journey. And you get to choose what that is. And I think the earth provides us with the people that it needs, right? So if there's a society that's living on the planet, civilization, and it needs an artist is going to be born. Okay. If it needs a leader is going to be born. If it needs a warrior is going to be born. Right.
Right.
And so we don't have to train ourselves, you know, like ADD is the perfect set of skills to have on the battlefield. Okay. This is not a disease. We just have misclassified these people and we're trying to get them to do something they're not meant to do. And they know they're not meant to do it. And they walk around. I have to get up in the morning and go do work for somebody else, so that I can drink water and eat food. I mean, I take part in the system, right? So I'm not, and I'm only complaining to a certain extent, but how ridiculous is that? You know, like if we're all the same, why is it that I'm paying somebody else for my basic survival? And that's a system so by treating ourselves, we lessen the number of people who believe that kind of system is in everyone's best interest, which is clearly not, right? And everyone kind of adjusts to the same page. And then with their eyes on each other, we move into the future, you know?
Yeah, and I think that just the way that you kind of phrased it is that if we see people, you know, kind of moving in that direction, you know, towards you know, kind of figuring these things out. It's like, okay, well, what did they do? And I want to be like that. And it's almost like
that's the example. You know, so yes, yeah, yes.
It's almost like a kid who's, you know, they're watching their favorite baseball player, you know, whatever, pick a sport, whatever it is. And they're like, I'm going to swing the bat like that guy. I'm going to throw like that guy. I'm going to be that guy. In their head, that's what they're working toward. Now, they may never get to that level where they're playing in the major leagues and they're at that level, but they're working towards it, and they're working on getting better towards whatever that goal is. And if you see somebody walking around and they got their shit together, it's like, well, okay, I want to be like that guy, you know? And we're going to work towards that. But if that guy came to you, that same exact guy, and was like, hey, why don't you have your shit together? I got mine together. Why don't you?
You're like, oh, like, fuck you jerk. Like, right. Yeah, why are you
back off?
Well, you were nice. You know? Being a jerk. Like, right.
My shit's good enough. Like, right. Leave me
and
alone.
And that's
right?
Isolation, right? And now you have two people on two opposite sides of the fence that are misunderstanding what should be happening between them, right? And then what happens after?
Yeah, and I think the best way to go about doing that is just living the example that you want to set for those other people, right? Try get yourself right. Like you said, get yourself right and move in that right direction.
People see that, man. You know, like and, my family.
And, yeah. Yeah. And people will notice that, you know, going forward, right?
That's our biggest gift. That's the most power we have, is the example we set, right? Mm-hmm. So, because even the people that people are going to hurt you, people are going to hurt you for being you, because it insults them, because they know that they have a them, and the world doesn't see the value in that they see in themselves. So there's a lot of people that are walking around miserable with their head hanging low because to that gifted people, God's children, right? Who will die because they're too afraid to share those gifts because the world has beaten it out of them. Right?
Yeah.
And like that kills me, because when I was.
I like the way you put that just now, that they have these gifts, but you know, society is the way that it is, and it tells you you need to go to school and you need to get good grades, you need to, you know, graduate high school and you need to go to college and
part in this system. The best thing for you is to take part in this system.
But that may not be the best thing for you. You may have other skills that, who cares about, you know, like an artist, for example, a painter, you know, they don't need to know chemistry and biology and all the sciences and, you know, all these other things, right? They need to know how to paint, and that's what they're great at. And they may be, you know, the next great artist of the, you know, the world, and, you know, the next famous artist, like a, you know, Michelangelo or what, you know, whoever, you name it, right? But them spending time in school learning about the things that don't really matter to them, it's taking away from what they should be doing, like what their purpose is, what their gift is.
Yes. Right. And they're depressed because of it. Because the world is telling them that, why are they depressed? Take this pill. Take this pill. Why are you depressed? Because you don't like to do what they want you to do. You know, this is all a natural reaction to a discomfort, you know, like this is, these, and on different levels. And again, it's a spectrum, you know what I mean? So like, I think a lot of these ills are just caused by people who aren't happy with themselves or their place, and they're confused, you know, because everybody, I think, sees that we're kind of losing our way, you know, like most people will have this conversation with and are like, yeah, you know, like, you know, they care, people care. It's just that they haven't been given the courage to do exactly what they feel is right, which is the right thing. Collectively, it turns out to be the best thing for all of us.
So how do we flip the script on this, and how do we fix this?
It's tough because it depends on where you are in your journey, right? If you're working a corporate job and you just know that something is wrong, or maybe you know you're having a spiritual awakening, or because I think a lot of this is actually, you know, is people's spiritual beliefs are adding up to what people are telling them is good or bad. So a lot of people are confused. Some people aren't going to want to talk about spirituality. It scares them. I mean, because it's the system has made it very easy, you know, like, and it, you think about it, all of this fear-based beliefs that they've been, you know, that have been propagated over the last thousands of years, which were all necessary in and of their own.
Yeah, no. So I guess the question is, you know, how do we correct this so that these people who are talented, they're gifted in certain areas, but maybe not the areas that society is telling them they need to be gifted in.
We have to love them. You know, we have to love them while they figure it out, you know, because their journey, you know, like, unfortunately, unfortunate circumstances are learning lessons, right? And like, and I take the view that anything that we go through is meant to teach us something. So if you if you're meant to learn a lesson, God's going to teach it to you regardless, right? And you're going to learn that. And it might take 100 years and a lot of pain, but eventually you're going to make a different choice. So,
right. So I guess we just need to kind of support these people in a way that encourages them to kind of pursue whatever their talents are. Their
people
gifts.
Feel loved. Right. That's the stick that creates space. So that kind of that when there was no pressure on you from the outside and you're not no one's telling you how bad of a person you are, how you're not constantly reminded of how inferior you are to, you know, like, yep. Amazing. Like, the beautiful mind is a beautiful thing. You know, like, you, like, people start to now, like, the intuition comes through. Right. And you start to realize over time what you really enjoy and what you don't. And then once you can get to that point, you know, that when there's enough space, the answers come, right?
Right.
And they figure it out and then people go on their merry way, right? Now, the problem is that, like, it's very tough nowadays to get to convince someone that you have to let people make mistakes. And like, you know, like the knee-jerk reaction is stop him, you know, or like, this is, you know, that person's bad. And really all it does is you have a lot of people now that are just calling each other bad and violence is propagating, you know, whether it's emotional or physical, and that we can't survive that way. Look at where this is taking us, you know? So it's an individual loving, you know, of ourselves and others and, you know, balance and tolerance, man.
And one of the things that I've noticed just in my own family, so we homeschool our kids, we have 3 kids. And so they aren't in school where they are, and I'm not knocking public education or I'm not knocking, you know, anything like that. So I don't want to get angry letters from teachers or anything like that. But, you know, I guess my point is they're not in a room where it's like, this is what you have to do. You know, we give them, I'm not saying it's like a, you know, unschool where they just go do whatever they want, but we give them a little bit of freedom to experiment and try things. They try, you know, some different art forms. They try music. They try, you know, just different things. And they start to, like you were saying, they start to just fall into where they.
This is the beauty of the human spirit. Everybody's got it. And this is what has been led away from. We've been led away from ourselves, you know, and I'm not, so like, you have to understand that I have, my view is one of defending the human spirit from anything that's going to hinder its evolution. Right.
Sure.
So yes, there are things that happen on the world and in the world that I don't agree with, and the systems, you know, systems that I don't choose not to participate in, or that I don't agree with, but I have to participate in. Right. But like, we're all here together at this time, and there's no escaping that, you know what I mean? And when that's the only thing that we have is what's in between us. And we choose that on a moment to moment basis. And the problem is that when cultural norms are steering us collectively away from our individual gnosis, our knowing that we have with it, you know what I mean? It knocks us out of alignment. And then when we react to that, now you're just getting a back and forth of kind of a, we're getting shuffled back and forth in the hallway.
It's almost like a conflict, like a war, where you have that the one side that's pulling you one way and one side that's pulling you another way. And so both of them think that they're right, but then there's that conflict and there,
but really there is no right. Right. So it's like, this is polarity. This is balance. It's not, you accept the bad in you. You don't deny it and try to be good. You be yourself, because mm-hmm. God wants you to know his, God can't know you individually unless you show him who you are. Right.
Right.
This is why, you know, like, so this is, don't get too caught up in the technical aspect of what I just said. Right. But I think
sure.
the point, like our individuality is our strongest asset. And what happens energetically and spiritually when people are true to themselves in a group is something that, that we've forgotten how significant it is. You know, we got to relearn this. This is how we survive. This is how we love each other, you know, and thrive, and everybody's happy.
That's right. Yeah. Well, this has been pretty eye-opening, just kind of just hearing your perspective and just thinking about that inner balance and the, you know, the pull between what society's telling you and what, you know, you're telling yourself. And it's like, well, I can't do that because society's telling me something else.
Right.
Just to me, it's kind of eye-opening, but I know there's probably going to be some people out there who this message kind of resonates with, and they are going to be interested in kind of learning more about how do I figure this stuff out? And you offer some coaching and, or mentoring or whatever to help people along this journey. Could you tell people about that and how they can get in touch with you and how they can get started on that?
Yeah, sure. So I, you know, I was, I have a, I, my life is spiritual. Like, so I have come to the point now where I, my life is dedicated to my spirituality.
Sure.
And I've, you know, there are things that people are not going to understand or that they're going to disagree with, but I want just what the point of it all is, if you feel like something is wrong, or maybe you've always felt this way, maybe you have secret talents that you're afraid to tell someone, or maybe you're psychic, or you know, something like this.
Yeah.
You can move things with your mind. However you're doing this in your head, right? If you have a gift and you've been afraid to let anyone know, if the world has beat you down to a place and you just don't understand why God is doing what he's doing to you, or you're just seeking. I have newearthleadershipacademy.com. So there's going to be some courses up there, which are going to be focused on reconnecting with our individual souls. Right. And within that framework, there's an emotional balancing class. There's a hyper perspective integration, which is a technique that I developed to help people manage their emotions in the moment. Because it's one thing to talk about energy and managing our emotions, and it's another to practice it in real time. And the reason why is because it hurts to fail, and most of us are going to fail before we succeed multiple times. This is work, right? So if there's people that are going to understand what I mean, and if you're ready, if you've had enough and you're just sick of it, and you don't want to feel any more pain, go to newearthleadershipacademy.com, enter your email address. I'll reach out to you and we'll get started. I can help reconnect you with your soul, right? So that's going to be finding the most authentic version of yourself and then and living it as best you can in your present circumstances, right? You don't have to quit your job and move to Bali, okay? You don't have to start meditating for an hour every day. Okay. You don't even have to start meditating at all. You're going to want to, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to teach you how to be happy where you are and use that happiness to build your character up so you can go and get what you want. And that's all starts internally with your emotions, right? NewEarthLeadershipAcademy.com. If you feel like this, odds are you're a leader and you're looking at the world and you're noticing that something is wrong, and I'm going to train you how to help people realize this themselves, and we're all going to do this together, you know?
Right. And that's great. And for the listeners, the link to the website will be in the show notes, so you can check that out there. Click through the link, enter your email, like James just said, and you'll get access into the training there.
So what, if they enter their email address, sorry, if you enter your email address, I'll send, there's a list of social media profiles, and I have the coursework is ongoing. I don't have the courses up yet. Right. But I want to be able to give people a place to go while I'm, because there's a lot of moving parts here. So
sure. So this is just a place to go where you can get the type of help to get you back in that balance, between that struggle of, you know, what you should be doing and what you think you should be doing, and, you know, everything that just keeps pulling you in all these different directions. So, again, link will be in the show notes, and we can get you guys connected, and, you'll take it from there. Right. So
I mean, I'm hoping, you know, so it's not, it's, and the reason this is, it really depends what the reasons people come to me are vastly different. Right. So sure. I don't want to say, you know, if you're having a spiritual awakening, come to me. You know, if you know something's wrong and you want to change, come to me. A lot of times what I have to offer is what people are looking for.
Excellent. And like anything, maybe it's for you, maybe it's not for you. Maybe you'll discover that's not really the problem. Maybe you are in balance and there's something else going on and you just have, you know, but you'll look at it and you'll be able to identify that hopefully relatively quickly. But my guess is that most people, when they reach out to you, they're gonna probably discover that, yeah, that is the thing that's kind of been wrong in my
life. It's hard for me to remove spirituality from this because it all comes back to that. Now, what the practical things, what they'll learn is mental alchemy, which is literally we're gonna learn how to change your thoughts, you know, Joe Dispenza style. Okay. And you're learning mental energy work, which is individual balance. There's a few different techniques and exercises. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, I want to take a minute here, to do a little segment, that I call, Is It Service Connected? It's a little way to end the episode with a little bit of humor. For anyone not familiar with it, Is It Service Connected? It's sort of like America's Funniest Home Videos, military edition. Take a look at a video of a service member doing something stupid, and we try to predict whether or not whatever happened in the video would qualify for some sort of VA disability, service connected disability down the line. Just a way to lighten the mood, give a little laughter when some of the episodes can be a little heavy. So, with that, I'm going to share this video here with you guys. Right now, for the audio only listeners, I'm going to try to describe it. Looks like it's a soldier trying to do
it's a rope suspend. It's a rope.
Suspense. The rope.
Yeah, it's a rope suspended. It's a rope bridge. And I know this is funny. I haven't seen the video, but I know what he's doing.
Yeah, he's trying to get across some sort of obstacle, maybe a river or something like that. I'm not sure exactly what it is, but let's give it a play and we'll see how he does. I'm guessing because we're putting this up here, it doesn't go very well for him, but let's take a look. Oh, he's struggling. Someone's trying to help him. Trying to help him get across. Oh, he reached out. Oh my gosh. He reached out to try to grab the other guy's hand, and in doing so, he lost his grip and he landed like right down in the mud. That was down below. I don't know how deep that mud actually was. It looked like he was pretty well covered.
Yeah, yeah, he's in it.
Yeah, he was definitely covered. I don't know if that was high enough for any sort of injury, but I don't know. Like, there might have been some rocks or something underneath. He may have landed on.
I'm sure everyone was laughing at him. He might have scraped his knee.
Yeah, exactly.
Depends on what branch. Maybe he depends on what branch he's in too. But
that's true. If this was like an Air Force situation, 100%. He's got 100% disability.
Oh yeah.
Marines, he's just getting laughed at and his ego is going to be bruised a little bit. But
that's funny, right?
So anyways, well, thank you for partaking in this little segment, a little way to end the episode with some humor and kind of laugh a little bit. I'm sure he turned out just fine. So anyways, thank you again for taking the time to join us. I really do appreciate everything that you had to offer and everything that we talked about today, I'm sure is going to be helpful to the listeners as well. So thank you.
Thank you, Scott. Thanks for having me. Really great experience.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On podcast. If you want to support the show, please check out Scott's book, Surviving Sun, on Amazon. All of the sales from that book go directly back into this podcast and work to help veterans in need. You can also follow the Drive On podcast on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, YouTube, and wherever you listen to podcasts.